I'm Baratunde Thurston, and this is Spit, an iHeartRadio podcast with 23andMe. This is the podcast that explores how our DNA is changing our lives and the world around us. For our first show, we'll explore how are we all related.
The most drastic examples of violence in humanity that we have were often justified by people thinking that someone who looked a little bit different or worshipped a little bit differently. But I feel like we're becoming closer together and the world's becoming less violent, more empathetic, and we're helping each other more than we ever used to.
You're not that different from other humans. You're actually genetically really similar. And that's the reality.
I am here with two guests who are changing the world, one through culture, one through science. We have a Grammy, Oscar, Tony, and hopefully soon Emmy Award-winning, certainly nominated artist, philanthropist, and Rosé purveyor, Mr. John Legend. Welcome to the room, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to see you.
We also have the co-founder and CEO of 23andMe. Please welcome Anne Wojcicki.
Oh, thank you.
Did I do your name okay?
Perfect.
Nailed it.
You nailed it.
Got the name. Well, John's doing a dance. I'm dancing
like
with John Legend.
I like both of you guys. Everyone needs to do this when they say my name.
We got
to
warm up, so I'm getting y'all warm. We are going to talk about what DNA means to us, the story that it tells us about who we are and how we're all related. And I want to start with you, John. Have you done a DNA test before? And if so, what have you found out about where you're from?
Yeah, I did a DNA test. I learned a lot about the stories of my ancestors, some of whom were slaves in America, and some of the courage that they displayed. One group in my family history literally fought in court for their freedom, and the state of Ohio defended them, the state where I grew up and was born.
OH.
Exactly. Yeah. Why I root for the Buckeyes. they defended my family in court because someone who was descendants of their masters before tried to reclaim them back into slavery, back into the South when they were living in Ohio, and Ohio went and defended them.
Wow. So Ohio defended ancestors of yours, yes, from being kidnapped by folks from another state.
Back into the South.
Yes.
But also they give you the literal breakdown of where they think your ancestry comes from.
So you got like the John Legend recipe.
Yeah, the recipe.
A lot of people want to know what the recipe is to make a John Legend.
So I found out I was 2/3 of African descent, okay, West African, and 1/3 of mostly European descent, you know, like Western and Northern Europe.
Okay, this is very exciting for me.
Yeah.
I'm blacker than John. I'm blacker than John.
I feel like black people, we kind of know our level of blackness. We can look at each other.
I mean, skin tone reveals.
Yeah, we look at the skin tones. We like, oh, it looks like he's mixed, or he looks like he's this.
Right.
But yes, I turned out I was 2/3.
Okay.
So, you know, whatever that says, that's what it says.
and you're very American.
It's very American, and I think when both of your parents consider themselves black, they have about the same complexion I do and probably a similar mix that I do. You're raised black, you know. They think of themselves as black, so you think of yourself as black, no matter whatever other mix is in there. And America kind of tells you you're black as well by the way America treats you and by the way America looks at you. And so I never really kind of accounted for or thought about the other parts of my mix because I always thought, well, I'm black, and that's what I am.
Right.
And, you know, we know what light skin and dark skin and, you know, brown skin or whatever is. And we talk about that in the community of black folks. But at the end of the day, we think of ourselves as black most of the time, unless you have a parent who's of another race, and then it kind of complicates it more. So that's what I always thought of myself as, and then I got the details on it when I took the test.
Did that change what you told yourself about who you are or where you're from? Or how
no,
you
because
to the
I
world?
Think I always thought of myself, and I think also considering myself black, but also considering myself African-American, which African-American to me means the possibility that you're mixed with
the
other.
The probability
and the probability that that mixture comes from probably a story that's not so good, which is a lot of times the white blood in our ancestry comes from rape and from domination from white male slave masters toward black women.
Yeah.
So we know that story. A lot of us in our community know that story. And so when we think about our ancestry and we know that part of it's white, we know that there's a good chance that part of that whiteness comes from something that was pretty evil and violent and destructive. So it's an interesting thing to grapple with. And it's part of the American story and the African-American story that slavery can never be kind of erased out of the conversation because so much of that history affects our legacy now.
Yeah, and it's literally in the DNA.
It's literally in our DNA.
Which is a nice segue to you. And what do you know about your genetic story and your DNA story, where you're from?
Well, both my parents are, my father's first generation. My mom's parents, they immigrated here. It was interesting because we're one of the first people that was ever sequenced or ever genotyped.
Right.
And so my mother is Jewish and my father is Catholic. And it's interesting because it was the first time we got the DNA back and you could so clearly see. I remember my sister saying, she was like, it's eerily creepy how accurate it is. Mm. Like the DNA really shows up. So I'm half Jewish, half European.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I have a tiny bit of Croatian. So I was actually like, we were excited for the World Cup.
Yeah.
Congratulations. When I was thinking about what team do I want to root for? I was like, well, I got that 1% Croatian. So therefore I'm rallying for it.
But I love DNA as an excuse to root for a World Cup team.
Oh, completely. So completely.
For black people, that meant root for France.
Exactly.
So what was interesting is my grandmother's from Siberia and she looked very Asian.
Yeah.
My great grandparents and more. And so we always had this belief. We're like, we're just part Mongolian. Like we know it. Like they're from, an area that was similar to Mongolia or close to Mongolia. And then when we got our DNA, that was actually our real disappointment because we were so, determined. We're like, look, we're like part Mongolian and we're really not. Like we're not at all.
That's how it was for me and Native American because you grew up in black families and so many of us kind of have this mythology or something in our community where we're like, yeah, we're part Indian for some reason or another. And I think a lot of particularly light-skinned folks might have come up with that as a kind of way of not acknowledging their white ancestry. But turns out,
nope. Not a drop.
It was like 1 or 2%, and then
it's definitely one of the most common. We see people who have who think that they know what their ancestry, and that's part of the reality. Is like you get a decent amount of non-paternity. A lot of people, are not necessarily related to the father that they think, and people have been there's different stories about where you've actually been. So the reality of whatever you look like today, you can look a certain way, but what's in your DNA can actually be quite different.
Yeah, and what's in the story that you have. Correct. Can be different from what's in your DNA.
How much non-paternity are you guys getting?
it's fantastic
stories.
It's an interesting
many stories. I think we are coming up with a new show.
It's interesting how, I feel like over the last 12 years, you start a company and you think you're starting it for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. And you realize 10 years later, the consequences of all the things that you sort of anticipated, but you didn't realize quite the impact it would have. And I would say one of those things is non-paternity.
Mm-hmm.
And you always know it's out there, but it's out there with a frequency that probably every single family has a story. So if you imagine that the nation average is about 10%, if you go back 3 generations, I always joke that you have someone in your family who's Uncle Joe, who's actually just Joe.
Or just dead.
He's like uncles in quotes.
So it's relatively high, but you go back statistically, you have enough people in your family, 3 generations, there's someone there that everyone has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of thing. Like we just found recently that we just found a first cousin. And it's interesting, like we kind of I kind of felt for this guy who, he was adopted and was looking for his family, and the guy logs in and holy cow, like there's a lot of us on 23andMe.
Yeah, right.
And like not only that, but he can see he's related to the founder. It's amazing. Like the
story.
Want to
borrow some money.
Right. This was not like
No. Okay. We see him regularly. It's great. And that's one thing that I've learned. Like one of the most interesting things I think that's come out of 23andMe that we're grappling with as a society, what is the definition of family?
Mm-hmm.
And, is it just based on genetics or is it based on, the community that you grew up with? And people come to me all the time and they say, all these people think they're my cousins and they keep emailing me on 23andMe. And I'll say, well, they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not that they think they are. You have DNA in common with these people. Like you are. So, it goes to, again, one of the main things I think that I've learned with 23andMe is how much the world is genuinely connected. Mm-hmm. Like we have, I grew up in the era of We Are the World and singing that and you believe it. But now I can see it.
Yeah.
Like scientifically, I can see
that
we are the world.
Yeah.
Like we're genetically connected, not just to each other as humans, mm-hmm. but every living thing on this planet. Like there is a common, like life all evolved in one way.
Okay.
And you're connected. Like, you're connected to the trees. You're connected to, the animals like running around. You're connected to everything here. Everything has the common four letters of DNA. And there's a beautiful story of evolution and how we've evolved and sort of how you've been optimized as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that's where like we are all connected. We are all the world.
So in the scientific grounding, there was a lot that you both just offered up. And one thing I heard from both of you is the story versus the science of who we are, whether racially, right? Scientifically, you're one third white, but your identity is black because that's what you grew up with. And, you know, you had a story of Mongolia and the science said, well, actually, not at all. But this common ground, these letters that unite us all, we find a way to exacerbate the divisions very effectively, right? We're 99.5% the same as humans, but that 0.5% is an area we have been eager to explore, to put it positively. And so I think for you, John, what have you seen in some of your work, in the way you connect with people through music, but in certainly your activism, about how we explore and exploit that very small technical scientific division?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think part of the goal of art is to bring us together and get in touch with our soul and connect us through like a common human experience. I play my music in New York. I play it in Los Angeles. I also play it in Johannesburg and Cape Town. I play it in Lagos. I play it in São Paulo. I play it in Beijing. And I feel like there's so much that unites us and that connects us to each other. And I think art is a really powerful way to kind of highlight that and to inspire that connection to even become closer. And I think storytelling, particularly when it comes to TV and film, has the power to help us empathize with other people when it comes to other experiences that may not be our own, or even seeing that people living thousands of miles away can have common experiences that we face and have common desires and loves and wants and fears. And I think that's part of the power of art. But also, obviously, like you said, those small differences have inspired a lot of war, inspired a lot of discrimination, inspired slavery and all these other awful things. Holocaust are, you know, the most drastic examples of violence and inhumanity that we have as well, were often justified by people thinking that someone who looked a little bit different or worshipped a little bit differently wasn't human in the same way or wasn't enough like them for them to feel empathy or love toward them, and use their fear of their difference to justify a lot of violence and inhumanity. So we've seen all of that, but I feel like we're becoming more and more connected around the world. I feel like we're learning more and more about how much we have in common. I feel like we're seeing each other more and more than we ever were before. We're living more closely together than we ever were before. And media has brought us together more so that we're experiencing the same things more than we ever used to. And so part of me is optimistic, even though we're in dark times sometimes. And sometimes we are really in disagreement with who's in leadership and some of the inhumanity that is coming from our leadership. I think overall in the arc of the world, I think we're becoming closer together and the world's becoming less violent and more empathetic, and we're helping each other more than we ever used to.
Thank you for that, man. The way you cast the role of art, multiple modes of it, it appeared to me as you've got this bird's eye view from Manila to San Quentin to Los Angeles, and you also have a bird's eye view, Anne. You know, from the 5 million users of your platform, which is one of many, but you have a particular window. What do you see? I mean, do you have a parallel version of what John sees through being in the field with the art and also seeing the divisions? Are you seeing a similar level of connectivity, but also division in that scale that you have access to?
I think people, you know, you go back 20 years ago when I was little and we moved, you know, my parents would take us to Thailand and it was like, oh my God, it's like a shock. Like it's such a different, you know, culture. It's a different people. We moved to France. It was different. It felt so different. And I think one of the things that's interesting that we can start to portray in your DNA is, one, we're appealing to your ego. So it's all about you.
Right. Yeah.
Like, we just taught you all about you, and you are fascinating. Yeah. Like, everyone is fascinating.
Guaranteed success in America.
Guaranteed success.
Tell me about me.
You are fascinating. And suddenly it's a sense of, like, I know myself and I'm fascinating. And holy cow, like, I'm really similar to this person mm-hmm. who, like, you know, lives in a tribe in rural Africa and is totally different than me. And we're really similar, mm-hmm. like genetically, like the foundation. Again, this isn't what we started the company to do, but I actually think it's a really beautiful consequence, is that people do start to recognize that they're more similar. And in some ways, like for me being sort of the nerdy scientist, like each mutation that has made you slightly different from me.
First of all, I'm not a mutant. Okay. I don't know why you're insulting me. I got you in this nice studio. You got tea. And now
I
you're
love
calling
my
me
tea.
A mutant.
We all have
we
beautiful...
We exist because of mutations.
We exist because of mutations. But like the reality is, like, mutations are why we have this spectacular people in the world. Like Usain Bolt, like, he's amazing because he has spectacular mutations that, like, that's why, like, he's evolved in such a way that he can obviously run really fast. Yeah. And you evolved in a way that, like, your ancestors evolved. So, like, you have darker skin that protects you. Like, people with, like, bright, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes evolved in such a way so that they could actually capture more sun. So, because otherwise, like, you're not going to get as much of, like, the nutrients you need from your sun, yeah. from the sun. So every mutation is a story of survival. And I think when you can look at that and say, like, we're meant to evolve and we're meant to survive. And because of that, you know, you can see this really interesting in terms of, like, virus in infectious diseases. So the 1918 flu, which killed, you know, millions of people. I don't know if it was millions or if it was a million. But there are certain people who have a genetic mutation that make them resistant to it. The same thing with HIV. There are certain people on this planet who are genetically resistant to HIV. And so similarly, like, we're all meant to be a tiny bit different to make sure that the next generation is going to be even better than what we are today. And so part of, for me, is celebrating that we do have these, like, slight genetic differences, because it gives me hope that, like, in 1,000 years, like, it's going to be even more interesting than it is today. And that by appealing to the ego through the 23andMe experience and, like, we teach you about you, you realize, like, you're just not that different. You're not that different from other humans. You're actually genetically really similar. So you have certain genes in your body uh-huh. that all different living species have. Mm-hmm. And so you can look at your DNA and what percent of your DNA is similar to a mouse.
Got it.
And we can see there's, like, certain things that are really fundamental. Like, they have two eyes, a mouth.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing, like, those are conserved.
Yeah.
Like, you're actually, and again, like, my dream one day, and my team always is like, Anne, I want this, like, I want a map from the beginning of life to have, like, when did we branch off? Like, when were there, like, different trees, and when did the mouse, and when the humans, like, we're all connected. Like, I want the whole tree of life. Like, but it started from the same place. Like, we wow. all really have that similar. Like, that's what I love. Like, we have the same, like, all of us have the same grandparents.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. it's like, it's so interesting. Yeah. And I think that, again, like, the beauty of it is appealing to the ego. Like, let me teach you about you, yeah. and then it will teach you about the world.
Just a pro tip. If yeah. you're going to appeal to my ego, mice, not the best. Like, velociraptor, eagles.
Lions,
black panthers.
We're going to
workshop
this. I mean, you know, I've been, like, hanging out more with my daughter, who's like, I want to be related to the bunny rabbit. So I need more time with you.
Yes. Okay, yes. He likes panthers. He likes eagles. This is
the lion, the panther. I love it. Okay, well, let me find out those genetics of those. Yeah. And we'll get back
okay,
to you.
Great. I want scientific proof that I'm Black Panther. That's all I'm looking for here.
I am the totally. Black Panther.
Totally. Okay, that will be my follow-up to this. I love it.
That's funny.
Oh, my goodness. So, within your family, John,
uh-huh.
how do you all, you have a mixed race family, mixed uh-huh. race children. Like,
you're talking about my wife and
family.
My kids.
Yes, your wife and kids. Mm-hmm. How do you all talk about your identities? What's the narrative you build? Have you done a whole family genetic test?
Well, our kids aren't old enough to really talk about race yet. Yeah. My family, my wife and I are very aware of where we come from, and yeah. She's of mixed race as well. And so she's one of those people that looks like she could be a bunch of things. So people ask her, what are you, all the time?
And she says, a banana.
Part banana.
So I feel like for people that look like Chrissy, I think a lot of times it's almost annoying how much you get asked what you are all the time. But she's also proud of her heritage. She's her mother was born and raised in a village in Thailand. And her father, his family came from Northern Europe, Germany and Norway, and they moved to America, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s for a better life. And you know, he's one of the first generations born here from a family that came from Northern Europe. And he met Chrissy's mom in Thailand, and Chrissy is the result of that beautiful marriage. So when our kids grow up, they're going to have a grandmother who was born in a village in Thailand, and they're going to have my mother, who was born in Springfield, Ohio, as an African-American woman. And they're going to have all of this interesting heritage. And part of it will be the fun of learning about the different cultures that they come from. They're going to have Thai food. They're going to have soul food. They're going to have, you know, European-American food. You know, they're going to have all of that. And they're going to travel the world with us. And hopefully they'll grow up in a world that's even more loving and more accepting of difference than the one we grew up in, and they'll have pride in their family ancestry as well.
And you've mentioned a couple of times that some of what you're seeing through 23andMe isn't what you exactly planned for. Where else has what you've seen deviated from what you expected?
A couple of things. I think specifically, actually, as relevant in this conversation, is the perceptions of race. We see a lot of conversation about like what is like, again, we started up very much as like, this is about genetics. We're going to really change the pace of research. Like we're about, you know, empower people with diseases, you know, come together. You're going to learn about yourself. It was very much focused on health. And I feel like we've gotten into suddenly we impact identity. And when you think about identity, you start getting into the race question. And I had no, again, we have this feature called Ancestry Composition, where it really does, you know, it shows you all the things we talked about, right, your breakdown. And we have stories, like one of my favorite stories was this woman who was adopted, and, you know, she came, she found through 23andMe, she was part of this reindeer people up in the Sami people up in the Arctic Circle. She quits her job. She has a phenomenal job in the Bay Area, quits her job and moves to the Arctic Circle to like live with the reindeer people. And she writes me 2 years later and she said, you know, I've never been happier. I've dedicated all of my marketing efforts to giving voice to these people.
Oh my.
I feel at home for the first time. And I take this story and I walk over to my research team and I go, you better be right. because
she just changed her whole life.
I said, because again, we started as like, it was very much focused on, you know, scientific research and, you know, a lot of disease work and making sure, and suddenly I have people changing their whole identity based on the information that we're giving them.
Yeah.
And we have another story. It was in People magazine a few years ago, and we were just reading the title, and I think it's, you know, Jewish woman with four biracial children discovers her father and grandfather were Grand Klansmen.
Oh.
And so here, it's one of these stories, like, whoa. And it's so crazy because she was the product of a fling. And raised Jewish, married an African-American man, has biracial children, and discovers her father, who is very racist, who's her grandfather was a Grand Klansman, was arrested for actually trying to bomb, you know, one of the first African-American schools. And here he is saying, I'm going to love my grandchildren. He's 74 or so. Like, I have to have a mind shift. I'm going to spend time with my daughter's husband.
Wow.
And it's interesting. The article is very raw because it's like, it's not like it's harmony on day one. It's not like, oh, I was wrong for 70 years. But
yeah,
it's like, we're going to talk about it. And Reki's like, I've committed. I'm going to spend time with my grandchildren. I'm going to love them. And I think that's the kind of, again, like we didn't start the company thinking this,
yeah,
but like, that's, I think, where when you find a real meaningful connection with somebody who's totally different than you, I think it opens your mind. Like, you're going to then be more open to it. And I think, again, the more it's where I love the idea of combining sort of that Facebook social networking world with people who are totally different from you, but they're genetically similar. And how much can we actually have an impact on helping understand differences?
Well, do you get involved in the nature-nurture conversations that people are always having? Because in some ways, people are taking the information you give them and almost recrafting their life to kind of let their genes in some way determine who they are. But also there's a side where people don't have to be determined by their genetic background or by who their ancestry is in some ways as well.
Right. I think there's a whole... You know, the nature nurture debate is what captivated me when I was 6 years old. The first time I heard about it, I was like, this is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that you have the potential to do? And then what can I change in my environment?
When I was six, I was fascinated by glue.
Well, today, that's also a popular activity with slime. I don't know how much slime you're making, but we do a lot of slime in my household. So the nature nurture conversation is fascinating because you have certain things that, you know, if you have the genetic mutation for breast cancer, you're just high risk. Like very high risk. There's definitely things that you can do in your environment to impact it.
I have it for high blood pressure and high cholesterol.
Wow.
So,
and that's where there's especially on the health side, you might know at an early age you're higher risk for blood pressure. Okay, do you actually change the kind of salt that you intake in your life? Do you actually from day one just try to say, if you knew you were high risk for addiction, do you just say, okay, you know what? Like I just had knee surgery, like no fentanyl for me, like no extreme drugs. Like just like, how is it that you can take this information and say, I'm gonna impact a little bit of what I'm exposed to? I'm a huge believer as well in the power to overcome. Like your mindset. Like, I love the 10,000 hours theory. Like, you dedicate your time, you dedicate huge effort into anything you want to do, and you can be pretty great at it. So you definitely have some aspects. Like, I'm not, you know, how musical could I really be? If I really dedicated myself, could I ever, like, be your sidekick? I think not.
I think she's asking for a job.
I would love, I'm a great backup dancer, though. So I think that it is, and I think the nature-nurture question is something that we're continuing to understand. Just how much do your genes impact the outcome of who you've been? Clearly, environment's huge.
Yeah, massive.
And so I think that's where it gives people an opportunity to say, hey, here's potentially what you were born with, but there's a lot of potential in the decisions that you make. And one thing I try to emphasize to people is that the decision, you know, to me, I'm 44. I've made a lot of decisions in my life. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I just wake up today and I'm like, hey, like I'm going to start fresh. Like, hey, you know, it's always good to start over. But every single day of the last 44 years has had an impact on me and who I am today. So it's important for people, like every single day when you're making that decision about Doritos and Ho-Ho's, like it has an impact cumulatively over time.
Yeah.
And every decision that other people make too, that around you. So like what kind of schools you're able to go to, what kind of parenting you're exposed to, and all these other decisions impact that.
All of that.
When you started talking, Anne, about, you know, at 44, you don't just make a fresh start. And then I'm thinking about your work, John, with Free America and folks who didn't have the 10,000 hours, you know, or had very limited access to the types of 10,000 hours they could spend because they were incarcerated. But they are, you know, many of them are returning and trying to have a start. Can you talk a little bit more about that, you know, this is a different form of nurture. It's like the opposite of nurture.
Well, I believe in the people can grow and that they can learn. And I experienced that in the work that we do around education and around the criminal justice system, because if you look at, because a lot of times I think a lot of people are kind of in their mind, they think you just are who you are. Like John can sing. He just is a good singer. Yeah. He's a good pianist. He was just meant to be a musician. But if I didn't spend a lot of time practicing, there's no way I could have gotten better to the point where I could be who I am today. Because a lot of people have some kind of grain of talent that isn't cultivated, that isn't nurtured in any way, and they don't make it to where I am because of that. And so when we look at our school systems, we have to decide, are we doing the right kinds of things to help these young people with the seed of talent or spark or whatever they have? Are we helping them become the best person that they can be? And on the back end, are we creating situations where they're not exposed to a good education, they're not exposed to good neighborhoods, and they're exposed to a lot of trauma, they're exposed to a lot of things that alter, and I believe trauma actually alters your genetic makeup, I believe. And if they're exposed to all these kinds of negative inputs, how bad are we messing them up so that the criminal justice system is eventually going to have to deal with them, because we put them in a situation where they're more likely to commit crime, they're more likely to be unemployed, they're more likely to have all these other issues that they have to deal with, that we as a society end up dealing with because they might get addicted to drugs or some other thing that happens because of all the trauma and all the difficulties that they've seen. And so a lot of times I'm thinking about, how do we make our society better so that the front end, we're investing in education and healthy communities and all that we need. And then on the back end, that we're not over incarcerating and destroying communities by being too draconian in our criminal justice system.
Yeah. I started this by saying, like, we have two people here who are changing the world through culture, through science, but it also, you've both used language around helping us be the best versions of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, through art, through action, through education, through scientific inquiry, through products, really. That's not a question. Mm-hmm. That was just a statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought maybe there would be a question mark at the end of
it. Well, there's so much potential that we have. Just think about sexism, for instance, when you waste the talent and potential of half of the population.
Yeah.
Just think about how destructive that is for the community. Just think how underutilized the community is when you say half of the population can only reach this glass ceiling and can't be their best self. And you put rules and structures in place to make that reinforced. It's such a waste. And if we're doing that with whole neighborhoods, if we're doing that with half of the population when it comes to women, when we're doing that with entire racial groups in America where, 12% of us are black, or another, 14 or so are Hispanic. And if you're wasting the talent because you're saying these people don't get included in the American dream, or they don't get included in what we think of as people that deserve a good education or a healthy community, it's such a waste.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that we always say in the company is that everyone's good at something. And we see this even just from how we operate the company is, someone can join on a certain team and not necessarily execute well, and we give them an opportunity to go into another team. Mm. Then we have some people then who move on to their third team and then they're great. And I think about, like, I was really lucky as a kid. My parents, I worked a lot of different jobs and I was given a lot of opportunities, but it's hard to necessarily find what you love. And like, part of the reason why I absolutely love what I do now, like, I'm lucky, but everyone's good at something. Warren Buffett always says, if he had been, raised in, a hunter-gatherer society, he would not be thriving right now. Like, he's not meant for it.
He found
what he's really good at. So I think that that's where is, like, more and more we try to help people, like, really believe. And one thing that we've done that I also love is that, and to your point on communities, is if somebody believes in you, and my mom's a high school teacher, she runs actually the largest journalism program in the country, and the number one thing she sees is she's like, you just have to believe in the kids. Like, you believe in them. And it's kind of what we do. Our philosophy with genetics and science is anyone can be a scientist. It's not, scientists have like kind of created this elitist society of like big words and complicated, and like New England Journal's not really the prettiest magazine to read. And like, it's really not user friendly. And I think scientists have created almost this elitist, like, I have a white coat and I have a degree and you call me doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And what we try to do is like say, like, anyone could be a scientist. You're in eighth grade. You want to be a geneticist? Damn, here's your genome. You can learn about it. And I think the more products that are out there where you just believe in people, people can rise. Like, I love seeing when I see kids and like people of all education levels all around the country who come to me with sophisticated questions. And they're like, I was researching my genome. I saw this mutation I have. And I'm like overwhelmed at like the differences in education levels. Anyone can be a scientist. You just have to believe in people.
I'm just like enjoying that, just feeling that.
This might be a too obvious a point, but I think the fact that we are so similar, the fact that all of us have so much potential, it just shows us even more reason why we should treat each other fairly and treat each other with love, no matter where we come from or no matter how far apart we are physically. And that really is infused in everything that I do in my career, both on the creative side and on the philanthropic side, is that we should all love each other and we should all respect each other's humanity and treat each other as though we understand that we have so much in common.
Yeah.
I think when I look holistically at the world and see, the traveling, everyone wants, like, people are traveling, people are exploring the world, much more than they were 20 years ago. And the world is becoming a lot smaller and it's becoming mixed. So I'm really optimistic, I think, about where the potential of connectivity by everybody. And I think it's challenging because we live in a pretty complicated time where there is a lot of animosity and there's a lot of hatred that's being surfaced. And I think in some ways, like, that conflict to me feels like an opportunity to seize the dialogue and to take advantage of the fact that people are actually starting to explore the world more and more and recognize that we are more similar. So I think about that conflict as an opportunity again of, like, reaching out to people who actually do have a very different opinion and who feel very different and actually trying to understand. And through that, I actually think, you know, I think in 50 years, I think the world's going to be a much better place. I'm really optimistic. And again, I see how much we have been able to change people in little bits and celebrate the diversity. Yeah. Like, I so love, like, there's nothing better than going to a community that's totally different than yours. And that sense of, like, I am learning on every one of my senses is absorbing something new. And the fact that people evolved in different ways it's just so cool. In that time, we're going to celebrate that more and more. And the more people are seizing that opportunity. And I think, again, we're living in such a complicated, dark time, but I really think that we will rise pretty magnificently from these ashes.
I love Bill Gates because one of the things he talked about is how much the world's gotten better, and he uses data to talk about disease eradication, literacy rates, poverty rates, and almost the rate of just wars. And you think about it, we had World War II, the tens of millions of people that died. You look at all these wars we've had in the history of the world, and sometimes we lament what's happening right now, but we have to realize, like, we have made some progress as a species in learning how to live with each other and learning to fight some of these demons that kind of have bedeviled us for a long time. That's where I get some of my optimism from, is just thinking about the arc of human history and how we're getting better at living with each other, even as, you know, there are more of us and, you know, we kind of interact with larger groups of people around the world. We're getting a little bit better at figuring out how to navigate that and get better outcomes for more people. And I think that's a good thing. And hopefully that will continue. I don't think it's necessarily true that will continue to in a straight line toward positivity and greatness. We have to be vigilant and make sure that we continue to steer our society in that direction to the extent that we can. But we should feel good in some sense that the world has gotten better.
Yeah.
It's safer, it's healthier, it's, you know, better educated, more equal, more fair in a lot more ways than I think sometimes we give ourselves credit for. I mean, that's a testament to people actually working to do it. It's a testament to NGOs going into communities and making sure more people have access to medicine and vaccines. And it's a credit to governments deciding we're going to do better and address the needs of our people. It's a credit to people that actually have taken the time and energy and the desire to go and actually make change.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just exactly what you said here. Like, it is the power of the individual to make a difference. Like, I remember very well, I was told in high school, one person can't make a difference. And I feel like we're living in a time where it's the exact opposite. Like, we see day in and day out how much one person can make a difference. And, like, you reaching out to someone and you doing something, like, it's the responsibility of each one of us that is aware and wants to make a difference, like, to do it and actually to, like, reach out and stretch yourself. And I tried to push people in the company, like, feeling uncomfortable is good. Like, push yourself and you will make mistakes. Like, you'll say the wrong thing, you'll offend someone, like, all these things are recoverable, like, but keep pushing yourself to try and make a difference, and you can.
Well, you two have made a lot of a difference in this interview, in your work. We have literally the arts and sciences in this discussion today, and that's a big chunk of our humanity. So thank you for your time. Thank you for the positivity I'm infected with us. Thank you, Anne, for letting me know that I'm probably the Black Panther.
You are. I'm going to come back to you with that.
I think we've confirmed.
Come back to you with that. We've confirmed.
We have confirmed it. All right. Thank you both. Want to dig in more on today's topics and guests? Check our show notes. And if you enjoyed the episode,
share it with a friend, all your friends, and be sure to leave a review. If you want to hear more surprising stories about how we're all related, search and follow Spit on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Spit is an iHeartRadio podcast with 23andMe. I'm Baratunde Thurston. You can find out more about me at baratunde.com or sign up for my text messages. Just hit me up at 202-902-7949. Put hashtag Spit Podcast in your message so I know where you came from.